The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is proudly presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. And Kinetic Skateboarding. We've actually got a special for them this weekend that I will tell you about in like a minute. On the show today, the Sixers sweep without Joel Embiid, without James Harden making a layup, behind the effort of B-Ball Paul and the offensive excellence, the excellence of execution of the Bret Hart of basketball, people call him Tobias Harris. Andrew Unterberger sits in for Mike, who I think will be back for the second round, depending on when it starts. But AU sits in again. Am I allowed to say why you're home? Can I just wish the best?
Sure,
to your,
yeah, please.
Wish the best to your mom who had hip surgery. You're with your mom, so AU stepping in, even though, and I want to hear all about it because I'm going to have hip surgery too pretty soon. So how's she doing? All right.
Really, how soon is pretty soon there?
I should have had it probably 2 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. She's doing great. Like, she loves it. She's in a good place. She's also in a very like drugged out place. So that helps a lot. But like she, you know, her friends are all being very nice, and her chronic pain is already like almost immediately gone. It's just like the pain from the actual surgery that's, you know, she's not like doing cartwheels yet, but she's in a really good place, and she is going to, you know, recommend the surgery to all her friends. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Good to hear.
Nothing to worry about there.
If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe. We got to get to 11,000 Twitter or YouTube subscribers by the end of the playoffs. We're at 10,221, I believe. Look, if you subscribe and you hit hit notify me or whatever, notifications, then anytime we go live, you will see it. We are live after every playoff game, after every single playoff game. Speaking of which, on YouTube, if you didn't go to Live Ricky 5, that is on there now. You can see the interview with B-Ball Paul. And I mentioned Kinetic Skateboarding. The special this weekend, the New Balance Numeric 440 hiking boot, normally $110, only $45 at Kinetic Skateboarding with code RICKYHIKES, all one word. The New Balance Numeric 440 hiking boot, they have it in three colors. There's not a lot of sizes left because a lot of people got them when we sent out the special earlier this week, but kineticskateboarding.com, code RICKYHIKES. And finally, from Carlos to Flan, I believe it's Flan or Flan, F-L-A-N. I'm sorry, buddy. I should have asked what your name is. Happy 23rd birthday. Carlos tells us that his boyfriend, Flan, trusts the process, both from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. Been a Sixers fan for a long time, an avid listener of the pod. Happy 23rd birthday. Do you think it's Flan or Flan?
I would guess Flan.
Flan. Without any further ado, Flan, Amos, and the chef. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy that might have to fill in for Mike, at least until the Sixers lose, because Mike may just be banned. Also a guy that doesn't play with his junk. That is one, Andrew Unterberger.
Thank you, Spike. I cannot believe we are here to talk about a historic Sixers playoff performance, and it's a good one. I never thought I would see the day, and I certainly didn't think I would be a guest on the podcast for it.
The Sixers sweep in the entire process era. There has not been a sweep. You mentioned it has been 32 years since the Sixers swept a playoff series. Now, we were talking in the filter in, which if you're listening to the recorded version of the pod or watching the recorded version of the pod, you may not have seen. The question is, we have a lot to discuss here. We have, of course, we have the Embiid injury to discuss, which we'll do that later, right? we have Harden to discuss, but the big question that I mentioned in the filter in, is this the Tobias Harris game or is it the Paul Reed game part two? Andrew on the burger, which one is it?
In the official capacity, as we said, every game is the Paul Reed game until it's definitively not. And it was looking in the first half of this one like it might finally definitively not be the Paul Reed game. It's still the Paul Reed game, but I think of our friend and my boss Jason Lipschitz in this situation, and I know I would never hear the end of it if we started this pod talking about anybody except Tobias Harris. And you know, we said Paul Reed had a rough start to this one, came on strong late. We love Paul. We're most excited about Paul always. This was Tobias's game. He is the bell ringer tonight. It's his game ball, whatever you want to say. He was awesome throughout. We talk a lot about how we don't necessarily love it when Tobias gets into his Tobias mode on offense, but in games like this, you need it. And we talked last time I was on about how he can get you those 50-50 shots, and sometimes that's better than any other option we have. And today it certainly fucking was. And he made an unreal amount of them, contested, pull up twos, doing his thing where he leans in and falls back, and 25 and 10, I think, were the final numbers. And just really from the first quarter to the fourth, steady as a heartbeat. Team needed it. Team needed every one of the baskets he got us. And look, who knows how much longer we're going to have to talk about Tobias Harris. Who knows if we have much to talk about positively with him in this next round we got coming up. Probably would bet the under with that. But he was magnificent today. And if we never get the chance to start a podcast talking about how great Tobias Harris was, we got to take the chance today. He deserves it.
So does that mean I keep the Paul Reed t-shirt on, or do I switch into the
Tobias Harris? Keep the Paul Reed t-shirt, okay. Whatever. He's still the leader in the clubhouse, and again, until deposed. But I got to start talking about Tobias.
Tobias had a great series overall, but specifically this game, he was necessary. So before the game, hoping against hope, almost one of those things that I hoped was going to happen, but sort of in the back of my mind knew wasn't going to happen. I said, well, this is one of the reasons you get two stars is in case one of them's down, you have another one to carry you through. And I'm like, this has to be an enormous game from James Harden. And look, just the way that he has looked so far in this series, and I got a little heat for saying I didn't think he looked good in game one. He did hit a bunch of shots. It became really obvious in the first 5 minutes of the game that it was not going to be the James Harden game, that he wasn't coming into this game saying, like, thinking or even trying to take over the game. And when it wasn't going to be the James Harden game, it sort of really felt like it was going to have to be the Tobias Harris game, at least offensively. And he does, to your point, which you make so excellently, and for some reason I think it's funny, but the 50% chance of going in thing is that he really can get that shot whenever he wants. It's just that shot's not a particularly great shot if you want the most efficient offense in the world. But he hit him tonight, and he was dependable, and he didn't turn the ball over, and he competed, and he, you know, even Maxi, it seems like when it's the Maxi game, it's almost like it's a lightning in a bottle game. It's like it's for a stretch, but it's not for an entire game most of the time. There's a window where he can put a nail in the coffin, but he's not the sort of like yet dependable guy you can go to over and over. And he didn't have a great game either. I thought he was better in the first half than his number showed. Maybe I was just comparing it to Harden, but Harris was enormous. He was absolutely enormous. And by the way, it wasn't just the dribble into the 17 footer, which he does a lot. He hit, did he hit one, two, one, three, or two? There's one that I remember that was particularly quick off the catch over in the corner that he hit that seemed like it was like he was doing a little of both. And I thought he competed and he was dependable offensively and make an excellent point. Who knows what the future holds? Who knows if he's a Sixer next year? Who knows how the Celtics series goes? But this game deserves to have Tobias Harris right up at the top.
Yeah, 100%. And we didn't really talk about his defense. I thought he held up really well in this game. And he has a couple big plays. He had like a strip off Bridges that went off Bridges' knee and out of bounds. It was a turnover. He never really seemed out of sorts. 10 rebounds is really good for Tobias. And he did something which I almost never see him do, which is he kind of fought to get in close to the basket. He missed a chippy. He rebounded it and he immediately put it back in. I feel like those second effort Tobias baskets almost never happen, or at least never happen the way we think they should. And he also had one play where his ability to, like, you know, we always get on Tobias for not getting to the ball quickly enough, like when it's a loose ball or in transition. He actually like did some good like dodgeball stuff in this game. You remember that one? There was one possession where the ball was, he was out of bounds and the ball was kind of falling towards him, and he did a quick kind of like ballerina pirouette away from it so that it was still off of the nets. We got the possession back. Just stuff we don't see a lot. Stuff we don't see a lot from Tobias, and stuff we always kind of get on Tobias for not giving us. He was the complete package tonight and today. And probably the biggest reason why we're going home happy.
And they grinded the entire game. And make no mistake, part of the reason they're able to win this game, and three of these games were a struggle. Three of the four games were a struggle. Now I know they won them, and it's a sweep, and it counts as a sweep, is that the Nets are not good, right? Like they had a flash from Spencer Dinwiddie today, who looked like he was going to be playing in China next year. The first few games of the season, he looked pretty good in this game, hit a couple of threes, looked a little quicker than he had looked. The Nets just are not, they have some nice pieces. It was funny to see Nick Claxton sort of thriving without Embiid out there. I guess you could make the argument that he thrived with Embiid in there in the last game as well. But I thought the team grinded overall on a day when nobody really had it going, you know, and they sort of had a fight. Even, you know, Tucker was like, didn't hit shots.
I don't want to hear this.
The entire team like grinded out there. Just because you were wrong about PJ Tucker doesn't mean you have to be a bitch about it. Like, I'm glad he
didn't start the podcast talking about how that 1-3 hit at the beginning of the second half was the momentum swing of the game.
It was a big three. It was one of the one times that Harden created a super clean look off of a drive that he had to hit the shot. Anyway, I thought they grinded overall. I thought Melton grinded. We'll talk about B-ball Paul in a second. He grinded. I thought Tobias Harris grinded. Like, overall, this was a game that, sort of like the last game, the whole first half, I know you're going to say that you never felt like they were going to lose. It certainly wasn't easy to win, I guess. And especially without Embiid in there. And Miller said at one point, Reggie Miller said at the beginning of the second half, this team looks like they know that they're going home for game five, and they're just sort of like sleepwalking through it, which I think
that was a premature diagnosis on Reggie's part. I mean, I get that like they started off slow to the quarter, and you know, obviously when they look bad, they look really bad.
But I think point being that a team could do that. Not that they were doing it, but point being that you're down 10 at the beginning of the third and you have game five at home anyway. Like, point being, not that they were doing that, but that happens to teams, and it didn't happen to them. So
yeah. And for the record, I did think there was a pretty good chance that they were going to lose this game. I was legitimately worried in that third quarter. I mean, because they didn't have Embiid, and without Embiid, the talent gap between the two teams still there, but it's not okay. If we just play this game for long enough, it'll eventually even out in our favor. And it just looked like the Nets kind of ran out of gas in the third quarter. And then that's part of that, I'm sure, is youth. Part of that is that talent gap. Part of that is the fact they have to kind of scrap for everything that they get, and they have all series. But
when you're trapping on every possession and then you have to scramble afterwards, that takes a lot of effort. You know, it takes a lot of energy, I think.
But I didn't think it was coincidental that their shooting, they started slumping midway through basically through every third quarter in the series. It started looking like they couldn't hit a shot. And, Bridges and Johnson had excellent games 1 and 2 respectively, but they weren't able to really turn it on like that again. And it just seemed like they didn't have enough, having none of them really having been in this position before, maybe playing, kind of bigger roles than they ever have before. And they just didn't have enough to kind of close the door on any of these games.
So we will talk about B-ball Paul in 1 second. Before we do, I have to talk about the DraftKings Sportsbook same game parlay we posted today that almost hit. And we have actually PJ Tucker to blame for not hitting it. Here was the same game parlay. By the way, you can create your own same game parlay on DraftKings Sportsbook. We love DraftKings. It was Sixers -2.5. I think the Sixers covered every game. I think they covered every game. If game three, you say, was -4.5, I think they covered every game. So the same game parlay was Sixers -2.5. Paul Reed, 10 plus points. Paul Reed, 10 plus rebounds. PJ Tucker, 2 3-pointers.
Oh my God, PJ.
It was +1,800.
+1,800. Anyway. I thought once he hit that first one, we'd at least get one more out of him because he got the momentum shots, but no, it just was not. Four for 20, I think, total from the field in this series, PJ Tucker.
Yes, I was somebody. I don't know if I'm supposed to say who sent this to me, but at halftime, someone sent to me, hey, Paul Reed live points over under is 5.5. And I'm like, ah, he looks bad. I'm not betting it. And I fucking didn't bet it. Anyway, DraftKings Sportsbook, official sports betting partner of the NBA and a special official sports betting partner of the Ricky. New customers make a $5 pregame moneyline bet and get $150 in bonus bets. If your team wins, just use code RTRS. Plus, everyone can get a no sweat same game parlay every day during the NBA playoffs. So if PJ doesn't hit that second one, open the DraftKings Sportsbook app, opt in, place a same game parlay bet on any NBA game. If it doesn't hit, you get a bonus bet back up to $10. Download the app now. Use code RTRS. New customers make a $5 pregame moneyline bet and score $150 in bonus bets if their team wins. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code RTRS. Got to be 21. See show notes for details, right? For details on the shoot. Eligibility restrictions apply. That's what I'm supposed to say. And then see show notes for details. Okay. Paul Reed. So Embiid is out, which we will get to. And there have been, CJ, if you can, look for the doc quotes and post game about Embiid. I think there were a couple of them. We'll get to those when we talk about Joel anyway. So Embiid is out. I think we all thought that there was at least a small possibility that Paul wouldn't start, that Harrell or Deadman would start to keep Paul in the same rotation, but they start Paul. And if we're being honest, as you said, to start the pod, we thought, here it goes. This is the game that isn't the B-ball Paul game. He looked pretty rough. Somebody was mentioning, maybe it was Gina, the Inquirer Sixers writer, that PJ Tucker was like giving him defense instructions during a break about putting your hands up. It looked like he was going to get baited. It looked like he was going to get into foul trouble. He got three, I think, in the first half. And it really looked like it wasn't going to be the Paul Reed game. I don't remember the true inflection point because I think the pass.
I can tell you what it was if you want. All right. Well,
So I thought the yes, I do, because I thought the pass and layup from Harden was after the inflection point. He was already on a roll, I thought, at that point.
It might have started, but that I still think that's the inflection point. I still think that's okay. The point where it's like, oh, that's right. Like, I'm fucking B-ball Paul. Like, let's go. Yeah.
Did you see the look on his face after he laid that ball up?
I think there was a second one, because like he got two really nice dimes from Harden and he scored on them. I think it was the second one where he had the cheesing, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't even really remember that, but like
it was a great grin. It was somebody said on Twitter it was like when a teenage boy gets the girl's number that he doesn't think he's gonna get and he's walking away. That's what Paul Reed's face looked like. It was incredible, man. Hearing the national broadcast rave about him, see him get so many big rebounds, both defensive and offensive, had eight offensive rebounds, had the one defensive rebound that he grabbed with one fucking hand.
Yeah.
The defense was incredible. It actually got to the point defensively where when the Nets were going into the lane, he was doing the Embiid thing where he would just show in the lane and they would see him and they would think better of it. Yeah. It's fucking incredible. How is he good now? How does this happen?
There were a couple blocks that he didn't even get, but like just his length and he was in the right position and they had to shoot so high over him that I think that Johnson might have missed a layup trying to do that. Like, there was at least one or two more. There was one where he kind of baited Bridges into getting his own shot blocked at the rim. Did you see that? He forced Bridges under the rim and then he had to shoot underneath the basket kind of like and the rim blocked it. Just, unbelievable effort, unbelievable performance. The same thing I was talking about after game two, where it's the combination of both the wildness and the finesse at this point. Really nice scoring around the basket. And like, the funniest moment, I think even funnier than the grin, was in the second quarter when things were still going bad for him. And he got that one offensive rebound and he tried to go back up with it. And Doc lost his fucking mind over it.
Yep.
It was the exact opposite of like the almost bear hug, two-handed high five that Doc gave him at the end of the quarter in game two. And you saw after that, like anytime he got an offensive rebound, he very methodically turned back around, looked for an available shooter and passed in the ball with two hands. Like he learned his lesson on that one. Hopefully he's not in Doc's doghouse forever because he made that one mistake in the second quarter.
Well, but he even said when we were talking to him at Live Ricky 5, like Doc wants him to throw it back out. But look, maybe it was because he didn't have any other options. I don't know. But Doc did not yank him after that. And again, his options are incredibly limited. It does seem a little bit like the 80s coming of age movie or something. And there's the kid in the class who's the fuck up that the teacher is constantly like, get him out of my class, get him out of my class, get him out of my class. And the kid just builds up and builds up and finally like gives this amazing presentation. And you look back at the teacher who never smiles and the teacher's like, you know what? Fine. He did a good job. I like the kid now, you know, and then the kid thanks the teacher for being so hard on him. It does look like when Doc looks at Paul a little bit and talks about him, he is certainly more open to praise him in press conferences. He gave him the two-handed high five the one time. Come on, Doc. He's growing on you a little bit.
Yeah. Doc was a smiling fool in this series, by the way. Every time we looked over at him in the fourth quarter, he got that big old grin on his face. And probably more smiles from Doc in this series than I can remember in the two playoff runs combined before this.
Yeah, he's probably smiling because he knows you could get two rounds of golf in this week. Right.
Are there good courses in Brooklyn for him to hang around, maybe hit? I don't know. I've never really explored those options. But
In Brooklyn, are you kidding? That guy is on a fucking plane to South Carolina right now.
All right. Get to Hilton Head or something?
Yes. He'll get 36 in tomorrow. Are you kidding, Doc? Well,
he deserves it, man. Good series from Doc.
He does. The number... We love to look back on the players that it worked out for, you know, the TJs and the Covingtons and the so on and so forth. But there's a lot of players that we believed in that it didn't really work out specifically. And this isn't me making fun of Mike. Mike's more of a believer in a lot of these guys than I am. But, you know, there's the Jonah Boldens of the world. Like, there's a lot of guys like that scattered across, I guess, the globe at this point. It really is unbelievable. All the support we put behind Paul Reed, and it worked out. I was watching the game, watching the fourth quarter where he was like balling out and they're showing he had, you know, 10 points and 15 rebounds, whatever the fuck he had. And Reggie Miller is effusive in his praise for Paul Reed. There was the one point in the third quarter where he said that Paul Reed was the reason the game turned around. And I felt very good for Paul Reed because there had to be times when it sucks when you can't get on the court, right? And when the things that the coach is telling you or the players are telling you to do just don't sink in the right way and don't connect, and you know you're capable and you are like the G League MVP and you know you're talented, you know you're capable, it just doesn't work. And it's just, not only is it nice to see it work, it's nice to see it work on a good team and have him be in the position to succeed like that. I feel like we've seen so many players not succeed in that way. And so many guys in and out of here, to see a guy that really, it felt like at the trade deadline that there was like a 50-50 chance he wasn't going to be on the team in a month, whether that meant he was traded or released or whatever it was. I don't know. I feel really happy for him because I know he's probably fucking elated right now.
No, 100%. And hopefully if Doc takes anything from this game, it'll be that, look, he might struggle for a half in the next series. There might be a half where he does close to nothing good and you still have to stick with him because eventually he will do something good. Even when things were going well for him, there was still like a silly turnover in there somewhere. He might have missed the putback at one point. There are going to be those moments with Paul where you kind of smack your head and shrug your shoulders or whatever. But you need positive contributors in the playoffs. You can't get by in the playoffs, especially not against a good team, a better team than this one in Boston, with just guys who just kind of kill time. You can't have those floor fillers in the playoffs. You just can't. You need guys who are going to contribute in a positive way. And if you leave Paul Reed on the floor long enough, he will eventually do that. And you saw that tonight. And it probably, I don't know if it won the game for us, because I think we probably would have won this game anyway, but it certainly made it decisive. It certainly made it authoritative in a way it would not have been otherwise.
The turnover was when he ran a pick and roll with Harden. Harden passed it to him in the lane, and he tried to do the fancy thing where he caught it and on the run threw it to somebody on the wing for a three, which is maybe a more advanced move that he needs to be trying to pull it off.
Next year he'll get there. Next year he'll pull that off. It'll look beautiful.
Well, we've talked about it a lot of times. There's a lot of skills he can work on in the off season. Really like he needs to shoot 2 million corner and at the break threes, because that's the sort of thing that can truly allow him to play with Embiid. I'm being serious. You have like a half grin on your face, but I'm being serious. Like if he can shoot,
this is a beautiful tribute to Mike, by the way, in his absence, that you're making the playing alongside Embiid.
No, but he's not a natural center or whatever. And you can sort of see it when he's going up against Claxton, because it's funny. Claxton is so undersized compared to Embiid, and Paul, when he looks up against Claxton, looks undersized compared to Claxton.
Claxton ate him alive in the first half. I thought it was going to be brutal.
He did. And I think, I truly think, and by the way, a guy like Paul, Embiid's never been a great rebounder. He's always been like an okay rebounder. And I don't know, the ability to play 8 minutes a game with Embiid next year would be huge. That's if they give Paul the $9 or $10 million a year that he deserves.
By the way, did you see like the second to last offensive possession of the game for the Sixers? The game was well over at this point. The ball kind of found B-ball Paul in the corner, and he really wanted to get a shot off. Like even though the game was like way over, it would have been kind of disgraceful to even try, even attempt a three at that point. But like he was looking at the rim and he really wanted to get it off, but he was just like, it was a little bit too crowded in that corner. He couldn't quite find the space for it. But that would have been, we might have had to lead the podcast with B-ball Paul if he had taken that three. That would have been incredible.
Okay. So I do, Maxey, I feel like, you know, had a mini stretch in there. It wasn't a great game for Maxey, but he had a mini stretch in there that was important. You know, it wasn't a zero game for Maxey. We mentioned Melton had a good game. I think it's notable that I just think Jalen McDaniels, for whatever he is, and I hope they're able to retain him because I think he's good, but he's just playable in a way that Thibault wasn't in the playoffs. Just and I think size is one thing too. He's just more substantial physically than Matisse is. He's more confident offensively. He's more skilled, but he's just more substantial physically. And I think he may not be as spectacular a defender, but he may be as effective, honestly, as Thibault is.
He was going against Bridges on one possession. Bridges actually scored over him, but he gave him like about as good a contest as I think anyone can, like any wing defender would be able to manage against him. It was like, wow, I'm impressed he was able to even get the ball over him, not get the shot blocked. But I want to talk about Maxey real quick, because you mentioned he had that one good stretch and it was really positive. And that was the first time I felt like, okay, the Sixers are going to win this game. But then I think it was the possession after that. He got the ball ISO'd beyond the arc on the wing against Seth Curry. And you could tell everybody on the team was just like, just fucking drive the ball, Tyrese. Get to the basket, get fouled maybe, or you know maybe even hit him with a step back, do something. And he just wouldn't take the opportunity. He kept passing it back out to Tobias, and eventually they had like a shot clock violation, or Tobias was forced into like a really bad long two they had to take because Tyrese just wasn't willing to attack Seth Curry on the wing because he just didn't really have the right runway for it, or he just didn't feel totally comfortable with it yet. And I think that's like the last evolution in the Tyrese game, is that there's he can still kind of get taken out of his stuff a little bit. And he doesn't have that sort of Damian Lillard type confidence where it like doesn't even matter what the last play was. It doesn't even matter what the result. It doesn't matter if he missed a shot, got blocked at the rim, should have gotten a foul call, but didn't. Tyrese still gets that in his head a little bit, I think. And he doesn't necessarily have the 100% unshakable, I've done this for years and I am Tyrese Maxey confidence to just keep doing his shit no matter what just happened. And that's like the one thing that we're still missing from. Because I think even though he wasn't very good tonight, I think it was an acceptable kind of not very good.
It wasn't, he wasn't bad. He just wasn't bad. Notably good. Yeah.
And he didn't get some calls. Maybe he should have, whatever. But I thought it was a good enough tie. It was a good enough performance, not necessarily a good enough stat line from Tyrese, but he's just got to keep getting at it, man. Like especially with no Embiid, especially with Harden being Harden. Like you can't be deferring to Tobias in those situations, man. You got to be attacking. You got to be a number one. You got to at least try something instead of, you know, passing out with 6 seconds left on the shot clock and forcing us into a bad long two. And that's like the one thing I still want to see from him that we haven't seen so far in these playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I think as far as his game goes, I think there's a bunch of things that he could improve on. And I also think that it has to be weird figuring out your role on this particular team, given both his age and the skill sets of the people that he's playing with. And it has to also be hard to know when to turn certain things on and certain things off, right? Like there might be a lineup out there where he should be the primary guy and he's just been playing with Harden and Embiid and Tobias Harris, and he doesn't feel like, not making excuses, just trying to think about like what's going through his mind. Sure. And then also, you know, the last two games, and we'll get to Harden in a second, and Harden's almost been deferential to him in half court, and that has to be weird too. But I agree. I thought it was a passable game from Maxey. And by the way, a game that I don't think they win without him. I thought he was important in the time that he was important. Yeah. We will talk about James Harden in 1 second after we talk about LL Pivorsky Jewelers, the first sponsor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. If very simply, I'm going to keep it simple. If you need an engagement ring, there's nowhere else you can go besides LL Pivorsky Jewelers. 320, at least 320. And Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners have gone to LL for engagement rings and purchased them from LL. Also, LL buys a bunch of merch and gives it to all of his Rights to Ricky Sanchez customers. So I'm not promising anything specifically. I don't know what the levels are, but he does have a lot of Ricky merch to hand out to his listeners. 320 engagement rings is a lot. He's been with us the entire time. I think he's been sponsoring the pod for maybe 6 years. That's a lot of people. And every person, the thing that I think is awesome about it, not only does every person say how great the experience of buying a engagement ring from Lee was, but all of them love to identify themselves as, hey, I'm number 186 that bought from Lee, or I'm number 212 that bought from Lee. I think that is really cool. There's not a lot of times, you think about if you know somebody else who went to a different jeweler for an engagement ring. A, did they get Ricky merch when they bought it? No, probably not. And then B, did they identify themselves as the number of rings that have been purchased advertising on a specific podcast? Of course not. He's the only jeweler that is a certified member of Coven, and the only jeweler that screenshots tweets and then tweets them out of scores and things. Very strange. I love him. He's the greatest, the absolute greatest, and you truly cannot go anywhere else. Once you buy an engagement ring there, you got a jeweler for life. Make an appointment if you're going to get an engagement ring. That's the way to do it, because that's the way you get that personal service. 215-627-2252. Lee at llpivorsky.com. At LL Pivorsky on Twitter. That store at 707 Walnut has been there for 35 years. And by the way, you don't even have to be in Philly. He sold it to a bunch of Ricky customers, just doing everything online and, you know, Zoom and fucking FaceTime, whatever it is. He is a supporter of our charities, Mama T's Community Fridge and Providence Animal Center, LL Pivorsky Jewelers.
He is LL Pivorsky, and he's been doing this for years.
Good one.
I messed up the order, though. I should have been the other way around.
We're going to skip the Montrezl Harrell thing.
No, we're not. No, we can't possibly People will be furious if we skip the Montrezl.
Let's do the Harden thing first. Fine. I think it's more important that we do the Harden thing first. And then at minute 52, you can say we never talked about Montrezl Harrell in honor of Mike.
I'm going to. We're not getting out of here without
that. I know. I know it's hard sometimes to listen to me talk about Harden specifically, because there is a perception that I am a Harden hater. I'm not a hater. I'm just not a believer, I guess, is what I would say. There are players that have come through here in Philadelphia, and if you put me through a lie detector test and you asked me, do you want that player to succeed here? The lie detector test may come back that if I said yes, I would be lying. There's some players that I dislike so much, I want them to fail. That's not how I feel about Harden at all. I don't care. Yet. What's that?
Not yet.
What? Not yet. Certainly not yet.
The 2 years from now, you're doing the I have to die speech about James Harden.
No, for sure. For sure. That's entirely possible. I would rather, when they traded for Harden, I wanted them to trade Harden the first time. For Harden when, like, I thought that was a failure the first time. When they finally got Harden, I was a little nervous, I think I would say, given the contract and how he would look. But I was still, I've always been a supporter of his as a player. I think watching him every game can be pretty tedious. All that said, I think this year he has played pretty well. I think I am not an optimist when it comes to his playoff performance. I'm not an optimist when it comes to his future, though, and people say this a lot, I would love to be wrong. I would actually like to be wrong. I'd be happy to be wrong. I would love to see him go off. I'm being honest with you. I didn't want to be wrong about Ben Simmons. I didn't want to be wrong about Jimmy Butler. I didn't want to be wrong about JJ Redick. I wasn't. But I do want to be wrong about James Harden. but I don't think I am. And he, in this series, they kept talking about the numbers on the broadcast, like they were representing Harden or something, like that they weren't seeing, that they were like, well, he has 18, 7, and 8. He blows every layup. And this is, and there's a couple of times, and we got a call about this at one point where there was a moment, let's see if I can find the call. There was a moment in one of the other games that somebody said it was his Ben moment, that he got under the rim. He was there for a layup and instead passed it out. Hmm. And he did that a couple of times today. And it's almost fine because he's been so bad at the rim and is not getting fouled. And people, I'm sorry, I'm going for a while here. I'll finish in a second. People are saying, well, he's getting to his spots and he's getting by people. So it has to be okay. Maybe it's just mental, which honestly seems worse to me than it being physical at this point. But, but getting to the rim and scoring is not just about getting by the guy. It's they're catching up to him, right? And they're blocking him at a rate that is like Evan Turner-like. And it seems, which it's true. And it seems like though he's able to get by somebody, he is not able to or choosing to get to the rim quick enough or elevate in a way that protects him. And because he's not getting the grift fouls, which by the way, you have to earn. You have to be a player that can score that way for you to get those fouls. That's how it works. That's how Embiid gets those calls, is because they know if he wasn't getting fouled, he would score. If you blow all of those layups and you blow those bunnies, then you're not going to get those calls. And I think that, and after we talk about Montrez, we'll talk about Embiid's injury and when he may come back and all those sorts of things. But this version of Harden, the odds of them shocking the world and getting by Boston, the sort of Herculean effort it would take from Embiid and the consistent effort it would take from Maxey with this Harden, I'm particularly worried about Harden, I guess that is.
Yeah, I wish I could be more optimistic, but I'm mostly with you on this. And the strange thing is that I think when we're talking about Harden's poor performance at the rim tonight, it was sort of two different things that ended up with the same result to me. Because in the first half, he was kind of being trailed by Claxton. Claxton was very actively baiting him. He was saying, you can go by me and that's okay because I'm going to catch up to you at the rim. Yep. And he was right. He was very right. And there was one play that was just particularly egregious where it looked like Harden had a clear lane to the basket and he came out of nowhere and just swatted away. And that was that. But in the second half was much stranger because Claxton wasn't really getting him on switches as much. Harden was still getting by his guy. He was getting a pretty good runway to the rim and he just couldn't throw it into the basket. And that I can't really explain. Maybe it's physical discomfort. He's jumping off the wrong foot. There's a hitch somewhere. I don't know what it is, but for one of the greatest scorers in NBA history and who is still over 20 a game this season, it's not like this is, you know, whatever, like end of career Moses Malone or something. I don't understand how that prolific a scorer could be totally perplexed at how to get the ball in the basket from an arm's length away. It seems impossible. And he's missing in different ways. He's missing off the rim. He's missing short. He's trying to hurl it off the backboard like he's shooting a banker from 15 feet out and it's going wildly off the rim. I don't know how to explain it because it was one thing when he was just getting blocked at the rim. That's lack of athleticism. That's lack of explosion. That's injuries. That's age. That's all that's bad stuff. And that's really worrying in its own right. But this, I don't know if it's more or less worrying, but it's more confusing because he was getting clean looks at the basket. Very, very, very clean looks. And obviously it would help if he could just, fucking jump up and dunk it. And he can't do that clearly. But the fact that he was basically given that entire paint area to do whatever he wanted and still couldn't find a way to put the ball in the basket. Maybe it's just a fluke of circumstance. Maybe it's him getting his legs back, but if he can't even do that, we are fucked in the next round, man. Like it's not even a question. And that's one of the reasons why, like you saw in the first half, they ended the first half with only 6 assists. I think Harden had 1, maybe 2 tops. And that's because they were giving him that path. They were giving him that lane to the basket. They were saying, you want it, go for it. And they were staying home on shooters. He got aside from a couple looks out to PJ Tucker, he wasn't getting anybody open shots. They were daring him to beat him and he couldn't do it. And I don't know, man. Like I can't imagine it'll be this bad for the entire Boston series. I'd be surprised if it was this bad ever again. But this is who James Harden has always been in his career. He's been the guy who has the worst games and the worst possible moments. And it's not looking like history is going to be changing this playoff so far. I don't know what to make of that second half. It was so strange.
Well, it would be strange if it wasn't that strange.
It would be strange if it was anybody besides James Harden. Right. Still a little strange, even by James Harden standards. But yeah, you're right that the precedent there is overwhelming.
I keep saying game six. Like game six last year against Miami don't rewrite history. It was embarrassing. And I do think that the person that brought up that maybe it's mental on the layups, which is, by the way, something that you're talking around, you know, without saying, is like, there might be something about him that just doesn't like want that moment. And, and the other thing is, and I know people will point to the Achilles on this one, that's fine. But if he's going to have a soft tissue injury at the end of every year for the rest of his career, he's had one, this is like year four consecutively, then that's an issue too, especially for a guy who hasn't the good thing about Harden is that even though he was a great athlete, it's not particularly like athleticism that fuels what he does. That's the good thing. It means that he may be able to age well, but the bad thing is that he's never been famous for like taking care of himself. And the fact that he would break down at 34 or something is not shocking either. I'm concerned. Here was the call about the Ben moment. 833 Lickface is the phone number where you can leave us a voicemail.
Hey guys, this is Ryan. I'm watching the game 3 Sixers Nets, quarter one just wrapped up. And there was a play at the end there that really scared the shit out of me. Harden got into the lane and rather than just going for the layup, pulled a Ben Simmons and decided to do a fancy little behind the back pass to Paul Reed, who did score because he's not Matisse Thybulle. It really just scared the shit out of me because it reminded me of that Simmons play so much. Like Harden was being so sick with this little pass the way that Ben kind of did. Just would love to hear your guys' thoughts on that. See if you guys felt the same way.
And the reason I bring that up is because there were two times tonight where he got into the lane and he passed it to Reed and Reed was not open. Reed had two guys in front of him and it ended up, one of them ended up, Reed ended up throwing it to Tucker, who threw up one of his famous, runners or whatever with 4 seconds left. And I forget what happened on the other one, but there were a couple of times where we're talking about basketball genius, James Harden. I don't say that sarcastically. He understands space and where people are as well, if not better than anybody I've ever seen. Those two passes to Paul Reed tonight under the rim were not James Harden passes.
Now, I don't remember these plays specifically, so I don't want to talk about them too much, but I will say that the difference between the Harden thing and then the Simmons thing was that the one thing we should have been able to rely on with Ben Simmons is him being able to dunk the ball. Like that's a very low baseline for a guy who was touted as the next LeBron James, to be able to dunk the ball when the only guy in front of you is like the shortest, most ineffectual defender in the NBA. I don't know if there is a situation possible with someone of James Harden's athleticism to be comparable to that. And it wasn't this, but you're right. It's not encouraging. It's not what I wanted to see.
Yeah.
I do want to say real quick, the first Harden pass to Paul Reed, like we don't have anything else really positive to talk about with James Harden this game. That pass to Paul Reed to get him that look out of the timeout was fucking gorgeous.
Yeah,
that was one of the best passes I've seen James Harden throw all year. So
excellent pass.
Yeah,
great. Yep. And by the way, just to go back to Paul, awesome to see James Harden passing to him.
Oh, so good. And like out of a timeout, like it was a design play. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. Trez, then we get to Embiid. Trez looks like he has done nothing but eat since the last time he played.
he's got a little bit of that like hangdog expression in the face now. He's kind of got that like lick faciness maybe even a little bit now, which I do not remember being the case earlier in the seasons.
He runs like his calves and feet have Charlie horses in every part of them. He is only 29. He is 20. He's not even 30. He's 29 years old. And a guy that you would think of at one point in his career as, hey, what's the defining characteristic of Montrezl Harrell? He's explosive. He can dunk. I am not entirely sure at this point if Montrezl Harrell can dunk.
Oh my God. And my favorite moment on the broadcast, God bless Kevin Harlan, the great Kevin Harlan, was Montrez like missed a bunny, one of the two bunnies he missed or whatever. And Harlan goes, you know, Harold has looked sluggish tonight. I was like, oh, that's couldn't have put it better, man. He has never looked particularly spry in a Sixers uniform. And tonight he looked sluggish. Yes.
Well, it's funny. It's almost impossible that, you know, we watch the home team announcers and we watch every game, every minute of every game. And you expect the national broadcasters to do their homework, but it's just when you're doing different games from different teams all the time, it's just not possible to watch as much as the home ones. And I can just imagine you're arranging your time as to, okay, who am I going to watch and think about? Because it can't be everybody. And I'm like, Harold, he doesn't play anymore, whatever. And you just cast him to the side, you don't watch it. And then all of a sudden, Harold comes out there and you're like you cover the mic and you say to the other guys, like, is that the same Harold?
Really?
Is that the same Harold? The dunker Harold? He looks like he's 350 pounds.
But by the way, for a podcast that started with you warning that you didn't want to get body shamed, we should probably go a little easy on Montrezl Harrell's particular weight concerns. But you're right; it's not for a professional basketball player. He has not exactly kept himself in tip-top shape. That might be an issue for a guy who already was lacking in athleticism.
All right, next we are going to talk about the Embiid injury.
Can I do a couple quick hits first?
Can I do
things?
Can I do Cornblau first, and then you can quick hits, and then you're. Well, I can't wait to. How are you going to work in Jaden Springer to this one? The Rice to Ricky Sanchez podcast. We're going to talk about Embiid in 1 second. The Rice to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Cornblau and Cornblau, the official law firm of The Process. You know, I shipped out we had some extra autographed Live Ricky 5 posters that we sold on the website, and I tubed them up and shipped them out today. And I also shipped out the extra VIP t-shirts to Cornblau and Cornblau. He requested 10 extra VIP t-shirts, was the sponsor of the VIP section of Live Ricky 5. Of course, we had the corn dogs for sale. That's the kind of personal injury lawyer you want. Absolutely. The kind of personal injury lawyer that believes in B-ball Paul, and that when you see advertising from personal injury law firms and you see that the guy on the billboard or the guy in the TV commercial or hear the guy in the radio commercial, you don't see that person out at events anywhere, because mostly what you're doing is you're calling a referral service. But when we talk about Adam Cornblau, you've seen him at events, right? He's there taking his picture with B-ball Paul. Cornblau and Cornblau has been there for 4 decades. His parents started it. They do right by you. They do right by you. They care. He's passionate about it. Personal injury lawsuits can take forever. They're frustrating. I went through one. I wish I'd known about Adam at that point. Really, really. And they take somebody who is passionate, who has the know-how, who's willing to push through it if it's going to be a couple years. And he's going to communicate with you the entire way. Whether it is medical malpractice, slip and fall, injured at work, car accident, whatever it is, Cornblau and Cornblau is the place that you got to go, because you're actually going to get the person that we're talking about. And that means something. 215-576-7200, 215-576-7200. Ask for Adam. Email Cornblau at cornblauandcornblau.com, K-O-R-N-B-L-A-U. And many of our listeners have needed some legal advice that isn't personal injury. He's always there. He can always find you a person. He's the guy you need. Once again, Cornblau and Cornblau, the official law firm of The Process. All right, your couple quick hitters, and then we get Embiid.
All right, Georgie Yang, a pretty good game. Two solid clumpy flumps, held up on defense surprisingly well. I a couple times he got on switches against one of their guards, and I thought we were due for a drive by or something. No, he held his own. Good minutes. Hope we don't see him again the rest of the season. But you know, he was good in this game. So shout out to him for that.
That's what I was going to say. The last time you'll see him, probably,
which is very fine. A lot of fans complaining about the refs. I mean, obviously that's par for the course to a certain extent. I did want to give the refs a very rare shout out and just say that the Nets were flopping like fucking mad, especially in like the third quarter. Patty Mills tried to like, you know, send himself hurling the other direction on like 3 straight defensive possessions. Never got called. Didn't get a single flop whistle. And like one of those would have just, I don't know if it would have ruined the on-court team, but it would have sent us into an absolute tizzy. So I wanted to give the refs a shout out for basically letting the players play tonight. I mean, there were a couple ticky tack fouls, but for the most part, they let a lot of stuff go that was like real borderline or less. And I thought that made the game at least a little bit watchable and a little less infuriating.
Speaking of the refs, by the way, I saw just all time cope from Sixers fans this week in a lot of different ways after the Embiid game. But one of them was, one of them was that the refs were trying to extend the series, and that's why they called it the way they did. So to get this straight, the refs, under order for the NBA to extend the series, when they had a very easy, clear opportunity to throw Joel Embiid out of the game, they decide not to do it. Then later on, Nick Claxton, who's playing the game of his life against Joel Embiid, they do decide to kick him out of the game. The refs were not trying to extend the series. Yeah. It's not what is happening. It's just like, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not good. The Sixers didn't play well. They weren't trying to extend the series. It's the fucking craziest shit I've ever seen in my whole life.
Yeah, I feel like it's giving the refs a little bit too much credit to say they had like a coherent conspiracy behind their actions in that game. Right. Like, yes. It was all over the place. It was total nonsense.
And then the Harden thing was an obvious makeup call. It was silly. Yeah. It was the weirdest call I've ever seen in my entire life. I understand it, I guess. But but anyway, continue.
So the last thing, we had a long argument in, after the Game 2 podcast about that timeout that Doc Rivers called a minute into the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's obviously like already like writing a book about it. Like he thinks it was the moment that changed the series. And there's like a big glowing ESPN article about it, whatever, ridiculous. I think never acceptable to call a timeout a minute into a third quarter. All it does is embarrass your team. But he one-upped himself today by calling a timeout with like half a minute to go in the third. And it was just like a minute after a different break in the action, and all the Sixers and Nets had done a trade buckets. So who calls a timeout with a fucking half a minute to go in the third quarter? I've never seen that before.
Are you have no comment about Doc? I'm no selling your Doc conversation because I
look, man, call timeouts like a normal coach, Doc Rivers. This isn't that hard. You've had a good series. You're doing good stuff. You're believing in Paul Reed. We're like your approval rating is probably the highest it's been with the Sixers franchise since the 3 years you've been here. Just call normal timeouts. Just be a normal coach. Call the couple at the end of the game that you need to advance the ball to half court. And otherwise, just let your players do their thing. Don't be a fucking weirdo about it. Calling a timeout half a minute to go in the third quarter.
One of the only things a coach can do is call timeout.
Yeah, is he just like feeling like he has to kind of get himself on the score sheet? Like what? Bizarre. No, I don't read that at all.
All right, Embiid. Before we play the quote from Doc the other night, CJ, were there any new Doc quotes on Embiid after the game? There were not, CJ says. So
there was a report that it's 50-50.
Okay.
On him
whether playing. He plays game one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is loose.
So here's what Doc said before the game.
From my understanding, they checked his knee out right after the game because he was complaining about some sore behind the knee, which is always a scary thing when it's behind the knee with players. And they were swelling already, which is way too early. And so we did the MRI. You know, as a coach, I hate that word. I hate those three letters. I mean, because it never comes out well. It just feels like that whenever they tell a coach, hey, we're going to get an MRI, you know. It doesn't turn out well most of the time, and this one did not.
How do you keep Joel from falling into the trap of, you know, this is like Groundhog Day all over again?
Yeah, I talked to him last night. I mean, obviously, clearly that's on your mind. Like, it is. But, as I said, this is another obstacle in the story that we're going to write this year. And you're going to be okay. It may take a minute. But this is just part of it. And that's, to me, like, I'm sure, like, he's human. And goodness, this happens again. So let's get him. Let's win. Let's get him back on the floor. And let's just keep, you know, on our own journey. And that's basically what we talked about last night.
So Doc says it's 50-50 that he plays game one of the next round. We did get this voicemail, which I think is an interesting contrast to Doc right there.
This may sound crazy, but I'm going to call first fake MRI results. It just kind of seems to make sense to me. Want to get your opinion. So like, I feel like you usually have an opinion on this stuff. You know, Sixers are up 3-0. It's been a really physical series. Embiid coming off a real stinker. Public perception is bad. There's a chance here to snag him. Maybe 7 to 9 days of rest, depending on how long this Boston series goes. So I don't know. Maybe I'm being super optimistic or a conspiracy theorist, but the Sixers are just being smart here. Physical series and calling fake MRI results here to get Joe some rest. So I wanted to see what you guys think. Thanks. Love the pod.
I also heard that someone mentioned to me that they think maybe the NBA didn't want to officially suspend Embiid, so they asked the Sixers to give a reason. When I had first heard about it, my sense was, and this was just gut, I had no information, that they were like, knee sprain, if it was game 6 or game 7, he could play. He is a little banged up. This has been a rough series on him. Let's see if we can close out in Brooklyn without him, because if we do, we'll have 8 or 9 days of him off. Then I heard Doc beforehand, and I've never known Doc as like a particularly good actor. You know, he tends to wear his irritation on his sleeve or something. And he did seem particularly morose while he was talking about it. My guess is that he plays game 1, round 2. That's like my gut. But after hearing Doc, I guess I'm not so sure.
Well, I definitely, someone in the comments was saying, I wish you hadn't played that clip. And I kind of feel the same way. I had not seen that before because I was driving from New York to Philadelphia before the game. So I missed that clip probably. Yeah, that was not super encouraging. I did not like anything that I heard Doc say just there. And I didn't like the way he said it either. That's not what I wanted. And it's not what I got. So that's bad. I think is the word for that is bad. If I had to bet, I would bet that he still plays in the series. And I would bet that he still basically looks like himself. But this is going to be the thing.
Yeah.
And it would have been great to go 1 year without the thing.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be this year. And it's probably not going to be next year. And we'll see about the year after that. But it is funny that call being asking if this is all just gamesmanship. Like, did you see after like the Sabonis Draymond stomp in game 2 of that series, how both players tried to kind of profess injuries? They're like they both went for MRIs yes. after that. It's all like media spin at this point. Like,
well, what's his name? Sabonis was questionable with a sternum bruise or something.
He got shot with a cannonball on his chest. Yeah, no, yeah. And Embiid is definitely that type of guy too. So I would not have been shocked if there was a little gamesmanship here. But that Doc quote is not encouraging.
It was not. Yeah, and your point about the thing, it would have been nice to lose without the thing, even if we're gonna lose.
Don't ask for much. We just want like an honest,
not asking game. To win, just asking to lose without like this kernel of what if X hadn't happened, you know, if he hadn't been. And he's this is again, and look, maybe he comes back, maybe this is gamesmanship, maybe he's fine, like maybe it's a sore knee, I don't know. But if he doesn't,
Doc is a liar. We do know that Doc is a liar.
So he is a liar, but he's not a good actor. He is a good liar. The other thing that happens is at some point you have to, what's the word I'm looking for? You have to confront the fact that this will now be every year of his career that he is hurt in the playoffs.
Well, I guess, can I say one thing to that though?
Mm-hmm.
This is why it's a good thing he won the MVP this year. And look, I don't know if not going full bore at the end of this season, next season is going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. Maybe it won't.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you sit him for 10 of the last 17 games and he still tweaks a fucking something in game 2 of the first round series, whatever. But at least now there's that option. So as long as he didn't win the MVP, and I guess we shouldn't be talking about it, he's already won it, but he probably will. As long as he didn't have that on the resume, he was always going to try. And he was going to say that he didn't care. And he was going to say that it was all about winning. He was going to say it was all about the playoffs. He was still going to fucking try to win the MVP until he won it. Now he won it. Now he can legitimately take it a little bit easy next year down the stretch if that's what the situation calls for. And hopefully the chances of one of these injuries happening in the first round next year will go from 90% to 65%. And that'll be a miracle.
This was, you know, you figure that the Sixers should sweep the Nets. And I think we all thought it would take 5 games. And then you look and the Celtics lost to the shitty Hawks, you know, and it is an accomplishment to sweep this series, especially as what a grind this fucking series was, you know, at the end of the day. And I think that's good. I'm not we'll do the Celtics like look ahead thing, you know, later on the pod this week. But I think for now, it's just like, I'm happy they swept him. It was as much of a, like a grind as the series was. It was a fun sort of series because it was different than any other series I feel like they've played.
Yeah. Well, it's different in that they won all four games, certainly. but yeah, I mean, it's so funny because like after game three, it was sort of like the classic, like apocalyptic Sixers win, where like, you know, they come from behind, it's a miracle victory, and still all we want to do is bash the team afterwards. And there were good reasons why. I don't want to diminish those, but it was also like, it's the playoffs. We were up 3-0 in the series, a series that everybody, close to literally everybody, predicted would go five games, and we were on pace to win it in four. And the only thing that mattered to me was that we won the games and we left them healthy. And it looked like we were finally going to do that, and now we got the other thing too. And so I would love to declare this a feel-good win series. I feel like it is, aside from this and aside from maybe the Harden stuff, because, you know, even though the games were ugly, even though Embiid didn't dominate, even when he was healthy, like, they were good wins. And they won in a different bunch of different styles. They won with a bunch of different players stepping up. This was the kind of series I generally wanted to see from them. I just wanted to see them get out of it fucking healthy for once and looking like themselves still. And I guess that's just too much to ask for. It's not going to happen.
So before we go, I'm going to play one voicemail. I'm going to read to you the seven I have earmarked, and you pick the voicemail based on the title of what I've named the voicemail.
Seven?
Well, I mean, oh, bro, we have a backlog of like probably 200 or something.
No, but you're going to read me all seven titles and I have to keep them straight and choose one of them?
Yeah.
All right, let's have it. Yeah.
First one, Mad at Me About Joel. Okay. Next one, Fuck Ben Simmons. Next, Heart Surgery Ben. Fuck Seth Curry. Drunk Girls at Game. Oh, and the other one was the Harden Ben moment, so we don't need that. So we have Mad at Me About Joel, Fuck Ben Simmons, Heart Surgery Ben, Fuck Seth Curry, and Drunk Girls at Game.
Well, the last two are the only ones that don't sound like reruns of other calls we've gotten in the past couple of weeks. I'm a Seth guy. Let's hear the Fuck Seth Curry take.
Hey, this is Don. I don't know if you guys noticed, but this generation's Marco Bellinelli / Ersan Ilyasova, Seth Curry, among idiot Sixers fans, got a DNP tonight. So it's because he sucks at defense. Anyway, good win. Fuck Jared Dudley and fuck the Nets.
Well, love a Fuck Jared Dudley. I appreciate him getting that one in there for the real heads.
A lot of funny things about that, especially this generation's Bellinelli and Ilyasova. As if
we've already lasted generations since 2018. Love that. yeah, sure, I guess. I mean, it's so funny how many bad players the Nets had to play in this game for.
Yeah.
How many like cooked players. And I have to say, like, if you're going down the Sixers MVP power rankings for this series, I think one is probably Tobias, two is Embiid or Maxey, and three is probably the other one, and four is Joe Harris. I cannot believe that guy played as much as he did in game four. He was something like 2 for 13 for the series. All he is to do is hit open shots and couldn't even do that. Like, every time that guy was on the court, I know Nets fans were going fucking nuts, and I was ecstatic. I cannot believe that guy is a consequential part of a playoff team in 2023.
Well, consequential, I guess, is up for debate one way or another. Well, here we go. It is likely the Celtics, and just like we feared it would be. But we have a few days to savor this. Maybe we hope Atlanta wins game four, grind the Celtics a little bit. Not that I would hope anything bad happens to anybody physically, but if somebody were to twist an ankle or something
it's
that
only
is
fair,
like,
man.
It's only you fair. Know, it's happened to us, you know. All right. We will thank you, AU. Best to AU mom and her.
And thank you to the people in the chat who's sending well wishes. I really appreciate it. And she.
I might have to talk to her about the hip thing. Did she just have a replacement? That's what I'm gonna have to do.
Yeah, just a replacement. It seems like it's going swimmingly. So.
Good. I have heard. I've heard the incision's like super small now and the recovery.
Yeah, she
like
only has like a Band-Aid. Yes, it's nothing.
I wanna do a pod from like the hospital or something.
That'd be a real one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. All right. We will talk to you later this week. AU, thank you for filling in. You have been a soldier. Appreciate you. We will talk to you next time. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you know Montrezl Harrell.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.